Well, there aren't many that know enough about comets like Professor James McCanney does. You know, he almost was a student of Velikovsky in that he studied him quite a bit. Velikovsky, of course, writing the book in his work, Worlds in Collision. Up next, we'll talk with Professor McCanney about the sun, about earth changes, earthquakes, alternative energy. Get ready. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Noted author, researcher, Professor James McCanney. Some of his books, The Diamond Principle, Atlantis to Tesla, Planet X, Comets and Earth Changes, of course. He's also talked about the physics of sun, earth, weather. His website, jmmcanneyscience.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com right now. Here he is back on Coast to Coast, one of our favorites. Hey, Jim, how are you?
George, good evening. I'm great.
Good to talk with you. Looking forward to this. Lots of topics. I was just talking with Stan Deo about Planet X. A couple astronomers think there might be one in the solar system. What's your take on that, Jim?
Yeah, I was listening. What I think is they're leaking this out as a somewhat of a pre-announcement, like to say, yeah, we knew about this. And I found it curious that they also did it at the same time as Temple 1 was being visited by the Stardust spacecraft to somewhat affirm that comets are really those little dirty snowballs and we don't have to worry about those. But I found it interesting, the articles about this Tyche, the supposed planet that they have not discovered yet, but they think they're going to. It's supposed to be far out away from the solar system by the Oort cloud, which is very far away. And its only interaction with the solar system will be to throw comets into the solar system. Now, what I've predicted all along is when Planet X comes in, and we're all somewhat expecting this, and I'm myself included, although I don't have a time frame. And by the way, I also make the statement, and NASA has actually supported this, there are many Planet X objects out there. But regarding this, any one of them, whatever one might come in someday, it's going to look like a large comet, and it's going to bring in an entourage of comets.
Uh-oh.
So my take on this announcement is that NASA was heading off at the pass, so to speak. If we see a barrage of comets coming in to the solar system, they'll already have their cover story. Oh, it's just that planet Tyche out there. It's not going to bother us. Just a few of these little snowballs coming into the solar system. So don't mind those, folks.
Yeah, right.
That's my take.
Look at what happened to Jupiter.
That's my take on it, that they are setting up a cover story. And I thought to myself, how curious that they did it at the same time as the Stardust flyby, which, of course, promotes the idea that comets are dirty snowballs.
And let's talk about that for a second, Jim. Why the big push on their end to keep us convinced that comets are merely icy, dirty snowballs and not made out of iron or other materials?
It's really strange, yeah, because let's look at the Stardust mission. Joe Vavirka, a guy that was at Cornell, still there when I was at Cornell in the late 70s, early 80s, and at that time claiming comets were dirty snowballs, very emphatic about it. And now they're taking a picture of something that a nucleus of Temple 1, and this is 30-some years later, there's no ice. There's no snow. There's nothing that you see coming off that nucleus to make the tail.
That's right.
Which is obviously there. But you have these same people claiming this is a collection of ice and snow. it's like looking at an elephant in a zoo and saying there's no elephant there. It just boggles my mind how this can happen. But that's a very necessary cover story because say that people found out what the real issue with comets, they're electrical. They discharge the solar capacitor. What would be the absolute first question out of everybody's mouth?
What happens when it comes here?
Yeah, what happens when it comes here? Wouldn't this substantiate Velikovsky's story of electrical activity between comets and Earth? And then also, wouldn't they say, why don't we grab some of this electrical energy out there and use it? Can we do that? And the answer is yes. Tesla was doing it. and they went and tore his towers down. So there's many, it's many faceted reason why they cannot. The oil industry, which controls government, which basically controls science, has a very big edict to keep the concept of fossil fuels going, that these oil and the coal, et cetera, came from decaying dinosaur bones and old fern forests. Well, we can see that coal came from plants, but there's something very unusual there. Plants decay at a very short period of time. Velikovsky pointed that out, that plants decay. So how, when you see coal and you pick up a piece of coal, it's matted plant leaves and pieces of plant matter that were piled up in a huge pile in a very short period of time. And then because there was no oxygen, it didn't decay as it normally would if the leaves fell one at a time like we see in the fall. So coal is not from a long-term process. This was all piled up and put there in a very short period of time, like a tidal wave coming in off of an ocean.
What is more deadlier for us, James, a comet strike or an asteroid strike?
Well, they're about the same. I think that NASA has very much overestimated the damage that would occur due to a strike of these kinds. The latest studies from the Yucatan were pretty sure there was something that hit there back in the 65 million years ago in that time frame. And they think that was the asteroid that killed the dinosaurs. Well, later studies have shown that not even the animal population, the major 50 species of animals that lived in that area during the time of the impact, lived through. Their bones are still up on the upper layers of the crater that were layered up afterwards. So they were not, they didn't go extinct even near the crater, let alone the rest of the world. So the Earth has the ability to absorb that shock locally, and it wouldn't be a good time. There would be a lot of after effects, but it's not this raging firestorm that's going to encompass the Earth and everybody would die. We could take a pretty good hit and survive it. I wouldn't want to be in the area where it hit, but I believe that NASA and the related scientists have very much overestimated the damage that would happen when something hit. But as far as the difference between a comet and an asteroid, it's a matter of size and of velocity, mass and velocity. The energy that it comes in with and what's left when it hits the ground. I've been at that crater down in Winslow, Arizona, and the rock that hit there was not very big, but it blew this amazing hole in the ground.
Sure, it doesn't have to be that big.
So it doesn't have to be that big to cause a big hole, but there again, that hole is very local. That was absorbed very locally. And for a mile away, you wouldn't even know it happened.
You know, I live, when I'm in St. Louis, pretty close to the New Madrid fault line. It's up north from where most of it is, but it's still there. FEMA has purchased 140 million meals ready to eat. What's going on there, James?
I was baffled by that. I sell emergency food on my webpage, and I'm very tuned to the emergency food industry and MREs and freeze-dried food, dehydrated food, all of that.
By the way, I need to get you in touch with our eFoods Direct people. They'd love to talk with you. We'll do that at another time, but go ahead.
Sure. And so anyway, I'm very familiar with disaster recovery, death toll numbers. I learned when I was visiting Los Alamos back in the 80s how the government actually makes death toll calculations, everything from natural disasters to nuclear bombs. This thing from FEMA made absolutely no sense at all. Okay, let's take a look at this. We're talking about the New Madrid Fault near St. Louis. Okay, so if that thing,
which is huge,
a major earthquake, they're talking from Texas to Florida and Ohio to Louisiana and all of those states in a big circle, you know, hundreds, 1,000 miles around the New Madrid Fault area. I made an estimate, 120 million people live in that area. They're claiming a survival rate of only 7 million people. And I thought, well, how could in Miami and Texas and all the cities in Texas and, you know, in an earthquake, not that many people die from the earthquake, unless, you know, percentage-wise.
Right.
Most of the people survive. So
that's right.
Out of 120 million people, how did they come up with this number of 7 million surviving?
Yeah, 113 million die? How's that going to happen?
Yeah, it didn't make any sense. Okay, so let's look at the food order, the RFP that they put out for 140 million meals. That's enough for 7 million people for 10 days. What are they going to do after 10 days? That's a pretty short time.
Then you're on your own, right?
Then you're on, well, I mean, this didn't make any sense according to what they were claiming would happen. So the numbers just, to me, in eight different ways.
There's got to be another plan.
Make any sense.
You're not gonna have 113 million people die from a New Madrid earthquake. I mean, it's
no.
Big, it's tragic, but it's not going to destroy Texas, Florida, Missouri, you know, Tennessee all at one time. That's not going to happen. It's going to hit a line, and that's going to be devastating, but you're not going to get 113 people die. If they're thinking about that, they're thinking about something else, aren't they?
Something else is going on. And so, you know, we've speculated, could it be for a private purchase that's actually going to go to somewhere else in South America where all of these political types are moving to?
You mean for storage purposes or to give away?
For storage for these particular people. Are they planning for something else? Just being, like I say, in the food business, we've seen foreign countries ordering this kind of quantity of food, which puts a real burden on the supply and demand, mainly the supply end of it, for keeping the constant flow of this food going to the consumer. Luckily, I've been able to keep up, but the point is, this kind of ordering is going on behind the scenes, and you know this is not going to the common man out there. These are groups of people that I believe are using public resources to purchase these large quantities of food for storage for small groups of people.
For themselves.
That are in power.
Yeah.
For themselves,
yeah.
Absolutely.
That's a good point. And they're just storing it away.
I don't know what the real story is, but it doesn't make any sense. The New Madrid Fault, if you look at it, I'm looking at a map of the U.S. right now, it's all countryside. You know, maybe a few cows might die, but for 500 miles, there are no major cities except for, you know, St. Louis and some of these, but mainly it's countryside.
Jim, I want to talk with you about the sun. It has shot off an X flare that's going to hit us in the next day or two, could cause some communication disruption. It's starting to get active again. What's your take on the possibility? This is an X flare that's as big as they get. We've had bigger X flares, but this is still a pretty good size, isn't it?
Right, right. And this is within the normal bounds of the sun activity as we head back into the solar cycle as it starts to ramp up again. But if you look at the average of what's happened in the past, we're still way, way, way behind average. And if you look at the numbers, just statistically, we're way behind schedule on the upcoming solar cycle. And I think some people are optimistic to think it's going to peak in 2013. The last real peak was in the year 2000, and we had a double peak. I know we did radio shows about that,
yep.
Where it started going down, and then all of a sudden it came up, and it sustained for a while, and then it dropped down, and then, of course, we've done radio shows about that two-year period with no sunspots, and it's just kind of coming out of that. So the sun is hard to predict. It's not meeting up to any of the what you'd call standard physics models for solar prediction. So I'm not sure, but this what's going on now is well within normal solar activity parameters. We should see some good auroral activity and other types of activity from the pulse as it goes by Earth.
I think the next couple of years are going to be pretty rocky with the sun.
Well, the thing that's strange is that we can get these blasts, and of course this one's coming pretty much at us. We can get blasts. The space is a big area, three-dimensional space, and the sun can kick these out. A lot of times great big ones have left the sun, and they don't affect us hardly at all because they're going in another direction. But a lot of people that I know, including myself, just feel it's just like, and I tell people, get ready, you know, because you don't know what's going to happen. But these things are, it's like our number is up almost. It's like statistically we're due.
Yeah, overdue.
Overdue, yes. And so this could be just an indication, like the kind of thing that can happen. But as far as this particular flare, it's, like I say, pretty much within norms. But if this could have been bigger, it could have been, say, a more direct hit, things like that. In the future, is hard to predict.
Isn't it strange, James, how all this is happening at the same time? The magnetic poles are shifting. We're getting these, you know, X flares now. There's just so much going on. Why?
Well, it's I can feel it too, and we've been somewhat sitting back expecting for a long time various events to happen. I am still confused with this story about the astronomers and this planet out there.
Some astronomers are denying it.
Right. Right. And that would be expected because, see, this is not a new story. They've done this many times before.
Sure.
They've called it Nibiru. In fact, these particular astronomers called it Tyche because they didn't want to be associated with the old groups that called it Nibiru.
Sure.
This is not a new idea, but they're billing it as kind of a new idea.
Yeah. I mean, the only new thing is they believe that it's out there.
Right. But now, two things about that release. It was released in England. Whenever I see U.S. stuff being released in England, it raises a big red flag for me.
How come?
Why is the release going on in England? And typically, these are cover stories for some reason. The other thing I noticed about the lead stories that came out in England, that the picture they showed of this planet and it's an artist's conception looks like a comet. And the main point they make is that this could cause comets to come into the solar system. It comes back to that idea that I was saying before. I think this is a cover story, and they know that if Planet X comes into the solar system, we're going to see a lot of comets.
And that's not good.
I know that's not good. No. And once these comets start coming in, and of course this is the entourage of, you might call them moons, of a object moving in, the other big planets are going to start to pull those away, and they're going to start to come into the solar system and become permanent members and change their orbits. So it's like a big billiard game where all the balls are moving all at the same time, and you don't know where anything's going to end up. It's a real shooting match, and that's what the ancients talk about. If you look at the ancient texts, the ones that are serious about talking, they talk about the sky is lighting up with many of these many comets in the whatever language they used or symbology or whatever they were using to describe. But very definitely, there were many comets in the sky at one time. So I just see it as a cover story.
All right, James,
go ahead.
You talk also about the myth of alternative energy. I want to talk with you about that when we come back in just a moment. We're with Professor James McCanney. His website is linked up for you right now at coasttocoastam.com. And we'll be talking about peak oil. Does it exist? Well, next hour, we'll open up the phone lines again and let you chat with Professor James McCanney about the topics at hand. Jim, what do you mean by the myth of alternative energy?
George, in my own work, I work on energy and energy systems. That's just one of my projects. But it became clear to me early on that the energy efforts that are being made, like people see wind towers going in and they go, oh, finally, we're going to have alternative energy and this is green and it's, you know, and people feel good. But what I want to do is just give some basic number statistics and show people how this is a myth that someday we're going to have alternative energy. And I'll point at the major systems. And actually, wind is a viable system for or a source of energy. Mm-hmm. But the systems that are in place right now are extremely inefficient. If you look at any wind installation, most of them are sitting there with the blades not turning. They only work at peak wind velocities of 30 to 33 miles an hour. And if you go down only 5 miles per hour in the wind velocity, they drop to 50% efficiency. And if you go down to the average wind speed of around 15 miles an hour, they're down to about 10 to 30% efficiency based on the model. But anyway, I put together some basic numbers based on world energy consumption. And so just in a nutshell, within 1 minute, something pretty much everybody can understand, the world today uses around 15 terawatts, that's 10 to the 12th watts of energy. And so that's an annual consumption rate.
Worldwide.
Worldwide. Now, let's look at Hoover Dam. Hoover Dam puts out around 2 gigawatts. It would take 7,500 Hoover Dams, with Lake Meads associated with it, 7,500 Hoover Dams running at full capacity to provide the world energy needs with electricity. And that means that we could replace coal
Nuke.
For electric, including oil that's burned for cars, and then nuclear power. And those are the three big ones. Of course, propane and natural gas is also used for heating. But those are the big four, natural gas, electric, and coal for electric, oil. But at any rate, the point is it would take 7,500 Hoover Dams to power the world's energy needs. Let's look at wind towers. The average wind tower will put out at peak power around 3 megawatts.
That's it?
Okay, that's it, yeah. And so the problem is it would take at peak capacity, it would take around 700 wind turbines to equal a Hoover Dam. But as I just pointed out, if you actually see, and it's really unfortunate, wind towers are sold at peak capacity. The governments pass them. They're installed. It's a good cottage industry relative to the energy industry. But the point is that they only run it around total 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. They only run at about 10% efficiency of their total capacity. It would take around 7,000 wind towers to equal one Hoover Dam. Okay, here's the statistic that is going to floor most people. At that rate, which is very realistic, it would take 52 million wind towers to produce the wind that we need, or the power that we need to cover the world's energy. 52 million wind towers. That, and if you look at, the need for New York City and in the surrounding northeastern coastline there, we're talking for just that area, probably about close to a million wind towers just to power that area.
Do you know what the landscape would look like, Jim, after that?
Who would produce a million of these? The big installations that are going in today have up to 700 towers. These are the big ones. Now, how many big installations of 700 towers would you have to put in to get up to 52 million?
That's never going to
happen. This is a myth. This is a myth, and it's being allowed, and people are buying into it. Hook, line, and sinker thinking that we're going to have alternative energy. Look at the solar or the reflective systems that go in. You can't start talking about alternative energy sources until you get up to the Hoover Dam type of power output.
What about the myth of peak energy, peak oil?
Well, there again, and I believe that there were some people who truly believed that we hit peak oil, and there were statistics on the surface that we had hit and gotten all the easy oil out, and it would be more expensive. But the reality is that there is amazing amounts of oil on planet Earth. We know about the reserves. Canada has vast, vast reserves. The Orinoco region of Venezuela is not the world's biggest reserve, but it is immense. Venezuela right now is selling to China at very low prices, while we're consuming energy here at very high prices based on a monopoly. But if you have a product, if it's food, water, oil, energy, whatever, you have to convince the public that there's a shortage so that you can keep your prices high.
Or, like diamonds, you keep them back.
You control the industry, and you
exactly.
do that with an iron glove, and that's what's going on. But see, there's a lot of tree huggers and eco people out there. And to placate that crowd, they put out what I call the myth of alternative energy, that there's hope. There is no hope, given the systems that we're seeing today, for alternative energy. Let's look at Hoover Dam, which is a great example. Everybody, it's in this country. China's building some bigger dams, which, because of their size, have some serious problems. Hoover Dam rarely runs at peak capacity. The lake level has been down, so it depends on rainfall.
Sure.
It's been, you know that. You live in Los Angeles, so you're very aware of that. But it mm-hmm. would take 7,500, imagine this, 7,500 Lake Meads and Hoover Dams to power the world's energy needs. That's the kind of scale that you have to understand to really understand the world's energy needs and what alternative energy has to do if it's going to be viable.
It's impossible.
It's impossible. But here's one thing that I've worked on. I started working with some groups, and I can't talk too much about it. But I've worked on some designs of wind energy systems that are high efficient at low wind speeds. And this is the thing that's necessary. And these are big systems. And they don't look anything like you've seen to date. But they are capable of putting out the 2 gigawatt energy range.
Do you think that some of the executives at the oil companies truly believe in the peak oil theory, or they probably know there's an abundance of oil? Which way do you think?
Oh, they absolutely know. I mean, you look at when we talked before about the issue with the BP oil spill, the reason they didn't want to harvest that oil is because they would have a boat sitting there filling it up every day with oil is just flowing out of the undersea vaults down there. And it would show that there is no shortage of oil. They have these deposits down there, 18,000 feet, 32,000 feet. We're not dealing with surface oil or shallow drilling anymore. This oil is in very many places. The politics of the North Shore of Alaska, it's pretty ridiculous, because when you look on a world scale, the deposits up there are dropping the bucket. If you look at we already know that a lot of the Mideastern countries are starting to go a little bit dry on the oil reserves. But if you look on a worldwide basis, I did a calculation one time. Given the known oil reserves on Earth, we're talking the Orinoco, the Canadian tar fields,
yeah.
Et cetera. If you burned it all, you would literally use up all the oxygen on Earth. So we can't do this. We can't continue burning all of this oil. And so what the conclusion I came to was, first of all, the oil industry needs the myth of alternative energy to keep all these people at bay, and then that keeps them living with this lifestyle and use of energy. We have a social problem. We're addicted, like drug addicts are addicted to heroin, we're addicted to energy usage, and it cannot go on. But to maintain these industries, which are very controlling, they have to have the myth of peak oil. They have to have the myth of alternative energy. They have to have all these myths.
It's supply and it's, Jim, as you know, it's supply and demand. And they have to let us think that the supply is going to dwindle, and that, it's probably true that the planet is using more than they're pumping out, but they'll just have to build new refineries. That's all.
Right. And so that if they can keep pacing it out, like you said about diamonds. If you hold back the supply, then it's like the world water supply, in a sense. Water is going to be the oil of the next century.
When you have a glut of houses for sale, the price of houses goes way down. It's the same thing. It's all supply and demand.
Right, right. Except in the case of houses, individuals own them, and they're not owned by corporations who don't control it. But if they did, they could easily control the supply of houses. They control the supply of doctors. Doctors make a lot of money because there aren't many of them. And so if there were lots and lots of doctors, like there's lots and lots of plumbers, doctors wouldn't make as much money.
Well,
in the case of oil and energy, the case I wanted to make is that we have a social problem. We don't have an energy problem. We have a social problem. And it's called addiction to the use of energy. And every day on the news, we're fooled into thinking that our lifestyle is okay, that heating a house in a northern climate through this tremendous winter we've had is okay. No, it's not okay. We cannot use energy up at the rate we're using it. Driving to work every day for a 40-hour-a-week job where you pay for a new car every 6 years because you're burning it up, driving to work in the rush hour traffic every day, this is insane. This is insane, and our quality of life is terrible, and people are unhappy. But people are convinced that that's what they have to do.
What do you see as the most pressing issue for us? Energy? Solar flares? The pole shifting? What do you think is the biggest immediate problem?
Well, the biggest immediate problem is just our lifestyle. It goes along with something else. If we keep living this lifestyle and don't look into the future, something's going to come along and slam Earth, whether it's a direct hit, if a Planet X object coming in and coming near us, or coming into the solar system and disrupting things. Even if it was a mild disruption, it could put us back to the cave ages, and with the infrastructure broken down, we'd have mass starvation. The planet is not planning for the future, either on this planet, and then if something major happened, it would simply wipe out the entire human race. So we're so short-sighted, we're so worried about the terrorists, the invisible boogeymen that are being put up in front of us. And the United States leads in stupidity when it comes to all of these things, because we should be the leaders. We should be the ones saying, well, we use 16 times the resources per person in the U.S. than any other country. So basically, these other countries are living in absolute poverty for our lifestyle.
Well, is it stupidity, Jim? Is it stupidity, or is it a planned effort?
Well, it's I'm trying to.
It could be as stupid as a fox, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But the point is that the leadership has us going down this one road, and the people are buying into it in mass. And unless you make an in mass change, then this is going to continue until the bottom drops out. And I'm not talking about the interest rate or the economic bottom. I'm talking about the real bottom, where the whole world just collapses one day.
And that's possible?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you've talked about solar flares, and in the United States, if the electric grid system here takes a major hit, just think, getting the products to repair the grid system to those locations all depends on electricity. To pump gas, you need electricity.
Well, I was thinking a couple days ago that, newspapers are dying, everything's going internet, everything's going electronic. And I'm thinking, Jim, what happens one day when, we get an electromagnetic pulse that wipes out electronics, or we get some kind of X flare that wipes out electronics, or whatever? I mean, the old days of being able to read the newspaper or pick up a landline for a telephone, all of those things will be gone. You won't be able to do anything.
In a flash. Yeah. I tell people to for example, save the bills they pay, right? The check number you put on there and the date you paid it and this kind of thing, because say that databases went down. Some, you know, these companies could come back to you and say, well, unless you can prove to me you paid this bill,
right?
You didn't pay it.
You can't go online to look at your bank statement, right?
Yeah.
A lot of places will, they're trying to induce you now not to take paper statements for your bills. They want everything online. And, you know, right. I won't do that.
Yeah, exactly. If something happens, and who's going to protect you? The government won't. They're going to be on the side of the business. They're just going to say, well, you can't prove it. This guy says you owe the money. You never paid, you know, and what are you going to do? I paid online. Well, that system broke.
Are you expecting anything dramatic on December 21st, 2012?
I don't personally. I don't have any personal reason to. I know there's a lot of anticipation. My thought is we'll be lucky if we make it that far, given the things that are going on. But
it's not that far away, though, Jim.
It is not that far away. We're getting close.
So we could be wiped out before that?
Well, it's a daily issue. And, you know, the point I make, like in the Diamond Principle, we did the release of that book on the show back in September, is that it would take hundreds of years. It's kind of like the myth of alternative energy. It would take hundreds of years for us to get a real space program together where we were really spacefaring, independent, had major cities in outer space that were self-sustaining and could last almost indefinitely if there was a major Earth hit on the Earth by some extra solar system object or something like that. But between now and 2012 or December, that's very near at hand. But the point is that, yeah, the things can happen very quickly. And as a society, we're totally unprepared. There's, you know, the people that listen to your show, people that are trying to learn about this, they're actually, if you look at the average person on the street, they're clueless.
Yeah, they really are. I think one day when all these tragedies occur, coast-to-coast listeners will be telling people, daytime people, what's going on, and these people will be running around with their, you know, with their, like chickens with their heads cut off. They won't understand what's going on, but this audience will. Jim, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment at the top of the hour and take phone calls with you in the final hour. Just want to let everybody know that tomorrow's coast-to-coast program, Hugh Newman joins us as he talks about Earth grids, the secret patterns of Gaia's sacred sites. It's a fascinating story. He's an author and explorer, and he's going to talk about what these ancient sites and new discoveries mean to all of us and the planet. Looking forward to talking with Hugh Newman on Coast to Coast AM. But when we come back in just a moment, we've got an hour of phone calls with the professor, James McCanny, right here on Coast to Coast AM.